Welcome to Creative Block. We're your hosts, V.
And Carl, we interview people in creative industries about their life, work, and hobbies while we doodle jam.
We asked people on our social medias if they had specific topics they wanted us to discuss, as well as some drawing prompts.
And today with us, we have Angel Ruminov.
What's up, guys?
Hi!
Hello, hello.
Hey!
It's been a long time
Yes.
coming. I've been really excited to have you on the pod, Angel, because you are the first game dev, I
Oh,
think, that
really?
we're having on the pod.
Cool. I feel
Yeah.
special.
You are. And so I kind of, and you went to school for
Yeah,
animation,
I mean,
right?
I kind of did animation and game development. My schooling was like weird and sort of non-traditional. I sort of knew that I wanted to make games and stuff like fairly young. I was like in middle school, and I was like, okay, I'm determined to do this. And I just kind of, started approaching it like kind of structurally. And then at some point I basically just argued with my parents. I said like, okay, I can do like high school, like home in like a homeschool fashion. And then I would have time to, and like the flexibility to like go to the community college and take classes and like how to use software and shit to like actually put games together.
That's what you did?
So I was kind of
Wow.
doing th them both for a bit. And then I was like, and then I guess I learned that you could kind of test out of it because I was going to be going to the community college anyway. And then I could tr later transfer from the community college to a university. And I like was planning to go to college, university, like 4-year college. So yeah. So basically I just kind of like constructed a plan and then started carrying that out.
That's so cool. It's so cool that you knew so early what you wanted and you were able to kind of make a plan for it. And what were the classes that you took in community
I
college?
think I was just like really willing to be ambitious. Yeah, I don't know. It was also like a thing in the environment. Like my dad messed around with computers and stuff. Like he had used them, I guess, like in a work and university context, like in Bulgaria when it was communist. And so like because of that, like basically as soon as they came to the US, my parents were like, "Oh, we're gonna get like computers and we're gonna get on the internet. We're gonna use this like newfangled stuff." Because I guess that was like one of the shiny new features of like being in the West, And so just like trying to take full advantage of like whatever was around, whatever they felt like they could wrap their heads around. And so like it was in the environment for me.
I remember when you told me that, Angel, that you like kind of at that p age sort of usurped high school and like started doing community college. I was like, you can do that? Because I was just fresh off of the trauma of having to endure like Florida public school for 4 years when we met at Ringling. And I like my mind was like blown that you had, it seemed to me like you had like a huge leg up and got to like skip a bunch of like bullshit, at least for me, just because I'm from Florida. And like, yeah, I mean, for people
Yeah,
who don't know,
kinda.
Angel and I go back. We met freshman year, like day one,
Yeah,
right, at
yeah.
Ringling.
Yep.
Yeah,
Dude,
so it's just
I remember the moment I met Carl and I saw like all the cool Thule Cooley stuff in his room.
oh yeah, my prized possession, the
Yeah,
Conti Kid Robot vinyl toy I bought for $80, and I still have it. It's by a plant now, but it fell during an earthquake, and it like yeah. So we put it away for a while because it's very top heavy. But yeah, dude, like it was anyhow.
reminiscing.
I just wanted to like insert myself into your narrative.
I mean, you are part of it. Actually, you come
Well,
into the
I
narrative
mean.
pretty soon, frankly, because like then I go to
But you
Ringling,
can
right?
probably talk more about like the foundation that sort of made you go into the whole thing or whatever, because like you have a very interesting kind of story as far as like your dual citizenship and growing up in Southern California and your roots in Bulgaria, right?
Yeah, Bulgaria.
In fact, that's where you are as we speak.
At this very moment, yep.
Yeah, very like interesting kind of but I guess if you don't have to, if that doesn't inform like I guess like the sort of like I guess the journey that you're describing, I just like think it's like worth noting, like people wouldn't know otherwise that like you have like a lot of interesting history and stuff, and like I don't know, but like you talk about
Yeah, thanks,
yourself.
man. Nah, it's cool. Like, I mean, there's like a lot there though, honestly. It would be like a whole, it's like you're getting to like biopic territory, like talking
I
about
mean,
like
I guess,
social
yeah.
realities and stuff. 'Cause I mean, like, my parents, or I guess my family was carried over here in like this kind of huge wave of like social, maybe not upheaval, 'cause it's not like things were getting like totally destroyed or something, but like you know, just kind of like wild, rapid change.
Well, I only mentioned just because, as I've known you, it always seems like your history and who you are had a lot to do with like informing, I guess, your ethic and how like and like your passion and this and that. Because like I can't really separate the two in my mind when I think about Angel and like what you're able to and just how you even describe what you do in a way. Because I don't, you're able to do the technical stuff. You're like technical directing, and I can't think. But like when you describe it, and maybe like because you talk about it the same way you talk about, I guess, yourself and everything else, and it's very easier for me to understand. And it's like, I get it. Cause I never, I don't, I, you know, I, you might be more, what is it? Right brain than I wish I was. Or is that the part of your brain that like is able
I
to
forget
actually
which,
like,
which one the claim is on, but I think the left brain, right brain thing is like a little BS.
Well, I guess it's very black and white.
Yeah. No,
that's
no,
how
but
the
I get
world
what you mean.
Works,
I get what
right?
You mean. Like, just like a different way of like breaking things down. And, making frames around things. I've been thinking about that a lot, actually. I feel like that's very important. I mean, I guess honestly, it's mostly, yeah, I guess so. If we want to clue in like a little bit about like, I don't know, childhood and shit, there is like this aspect of coming to the US and then like having to like learn the language. And so like, so I was here for a bit and then I went back. And so then I like, I finally, sorry, when I say here, I'm in Bulgaria now, that's confusing. Okay, so I was in the US for a little bit, and then they sent me back for a while, because it didn't seem like things were gonna like go that well necessarily. And then I was in Bulgaria for like a couple years, and like here I learned to like speak Bulgarian and stuff. And that was how I like acquired, you know, speech initially, more or less. But then like I moved to the US and I just kind of like started school after like a couple months, and you know, just hit the ground running. To be honest, I wasn't actually that self-aware that like I didn't speak like the other kids. So they had me, I mean, it's actually like a good thing, like in the California schools, at least at that time, I don't know what they do now, they kind of had like somebody come by to do, to like help us learn how to like pronounce stuff and familiarize ourselves with English a little bit, give us a little bit of like extra practice for like the, I guess like four, like second, English is a second language kids. And but what's funny is like I didn't have the self-awareness to understand that like the other kids didn't also do that at some point. Like I didn't realize that until like 2 or 3 years later or something.
ESL, yeah, dude. I feel, man, that's good that they taught you pronunciation, because when I went to ESL, I was just like, this is just a lower grade of English. It was just the same stuff you would do in English class, except a couple grades lower. So I was like, this is a waste of my time.
I mean, this was like in first grade, right? So also that was like early, right when they were just starting to really fuck the school system, right? So like they had some really great things then. Like in those schools, like they had computers too, right? Like they had those Macs and stuff. But like, hey, from what I've heard, it sounds like we got the opportunity to use them a lot earlier than kids in other schools started to. Like if they did roll them out in a school, they would only let like the older kids start with them, for example, right? But in our case, they let us start, I think, in second grade, right? Like 7-year-olds like clicking around on these things that, you know, otherwise like the average person at that time thought of that as like a business machine, right?
Mm-hmm. I was wondering a little bit about, you said you were interested in video games, and that was kind of like the path that you kind of saw for yourself.
Yeah, well, actually the first thing I wanted to do was make robots. Like I wanted to be like mad scientist making robots. And just like unironically, I totally still do, honestly, but it's like a little further down the timeline.
How did you come about to going to, how did you end up in animation school, even though you had kind of more of that engineer mindset or like background almost?
I mean, basically, so let's get back to the college stuff. Actually, so I mentioned the thing about like the schools kind of being like dismantled a little bit and like savaged, underfunded, et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. So that actually also characterizes some of like the decisions, right? Like, so I had some, I'm like pretty neurodivergent. like I've got Tourette syndrome, and like I had pretty intense like obsessive compulsions as a kid, which like, I don't really deal with that very much now, but I definitely am like still pretty ADD, you know? And so like at some point, like public school got a little difficult in that context. And so that was like where the initial decision to like homeschool me came from. And that was like where like my parents first came into any kind of knowledge about like looking at the details of how the school system works, how it runs, like what the expectations are, and like even asking those questions that most people probably never ask. And so that was like a major reason that we were like informed on any of those other options, right? So yeah, and then so part of it also was like that we were seeing like the schools kind of get worse progressively. Like every time like I went to a new school, so like we moved once and I went to a different elementary school, and it was like okay, but I had a teacher who was like, I don't know, she didn't seem to like children. It was weird. I don't know why she was a school teacher. And she was like vocal about it too. It was odd. It's like one of those things, like people think it's like funny if they say like, I know I'm a bitch. It's like, yeah, but that doesn't make it, oh, you're still trying not.
I feel like there's always a couple teachers like that, like
Yeah,
who
I guess
aren't in it
so.
for like an enthusiasm for like promoting like the knowledge needed. They're there for maybe like, I don't know, maybe they lost a bet or something. Like, because I'm like, it's a hard job to just want to
Well,
do
so it
and
wasn't as
you don't
hard
even
then,
like it.
right? I think it wasn't as hard
Yeah.
then. So now, oh
Maybe
man.
that's what it is.
I feel for teachers, they're like actually
Oh
doing
my
God's
God.
work or trying. But anyway, so yeah, that's neither here nor there. What was the last thing I was on? The teacher, I got a little sidetracked talking about her, like
About the
on
teacher. Yeah,
personal.
you were talking about how the schools were kind of not
Oh
really
yeah.
great,
So
and so that's how you started paying attention to how the system works.
yeah, so basically, yeah, we started thinking about that. I had some kind of like challenges because of the neurological disorders, I guess. Yeah, so then when like I initially started middle school, it was just kind of like very clear, like, oh wow, this is like worse than the last school. And you could just kind of see the changes taking place, I guess, like intuitively. Like I don't think we were like super politically aware or whatever of what was or wasn't happening, but like you could just kind of feel it. And then my mom was gonna go back to school at the same time, and so she decided to like make it extra hard on herself and then like teach us at the same time. But that also meant that I was exposed to like to shortcut it, she would kind of use like some of her school material, but it was like college level stuff, right? But so I was like exposed to like a more sophisticated perspective of it, because she was willing to give it a shot, like let's see if this works, see if they can deal with this version of an explanation, right? So like my first exposure to art history was from like her art history textbook. I basically just like read her art history textbook after her. She was like, this is good, read this.
What were the textbook? Where were they from? Like, were they like American art history textbook
Yeah,
or
American
okay?
ones. It was what she had when she was going to the community college that then I later went to.
Oh, gotcha. Oh, that is so cool.
Actually, I started before she finished.
Oh, that's so funny.
Yeah.
What were the main things that you remember from reading that
I
textbook?
mean,
Like,
I
the
the clearest part actually is the initial part where it just starts in like prehistory and the Neolithic. And so like I got that in sixth grade, and that was like when the homeschooling started and whatnot. And so then I also had like a lot of time to like explore and make models of these things, and like I practiced like chipping stone. I did all kinds of like silly bullshit in my yard,
Chipping
and
stone, like actual, like, are you talking about like the act of like carving
no,
stones
like
and...
flint knapping, like making arrowheads and stuff.
Oh,
Yeah. We're
gosh.
trying to like cleave like different minerals into like kind of blades, right? To make like tools, make like stone tools. And I was like really interested in like the history and the anthropology of it and stuff like that. And also like that early art. Like I still think about it. Yeah. I think a lot about like the earliest artists, the people. I mean, I think of them as animators, really. Like looking at the Lascaux caves and stuff, I've always found it like pretty magical. And there's like the sense of movement and whatnot. And also back then, they didn't have like a picture frame, right? But you still see a tendency of some sort of arrangement. So like there's almost a sense of composition, but then, as far as you can tell from remaining evidence, there doesn't seem to be like a particular frame around it. And like I find that very interesting too, right? Like pre-frame images, like it's interesting to me to think about like when someone first decided to like take it off the wall, and like one of the older cave painters going like, whoa, 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 son, you've lost the way. This is not art. You can't do this. But they did it anyway. The maniac,
That's funny to imagine. It's funny, especially to think about how it started writing on the walls, and then eventually for mass production, I guess, even if you go back to printing, it had to be on paper so people could like carry it around. But then eventually art kind of came back to being on the walls of like homes and museums, because that was a display of wealth. I think that's pretty interesting how it kind of went back around, but for status. So you were learning at home and learning all of these different things. And I keep kind of going back to the animation versus video games, because and the engineering side of it, because I think that's interesting that there are sides of animation that can be kind of related to engineering. Like there are parts of the pipeline where I guess you can write scripts, and also if you do 3D animation, there's stuff that can kind of maybe like correlate between the two.
Well, in my opinion, it's like it's all engineering.
Oh right? Yeah, even
like that's actually one of the reasons I'm interested in it, right? Because like, so the part of my decision to like say like, okay, I'm gonna make video games was because like I said, initially I wanted to make robots. And then but I was drawn to them because of like media I'd seen, right, and movie stuff. And so then I was like watching things about like behind the scenes of how movies are made, but like really, you know, just whatever bullshit was on TV, right? But I was like engaged by it, and I would wonder about it, and I would also like dismantle stuff and try to like reconfigure it and shit, like dismantling VCRs, and I don't know, just like whatever had to go, or whatever, I don't know, like, yeah, just like crap that like my dad could get a hold of and would let me get my grubby little hands on, my little screwdriver.
I was gonna say, you like had VCRs to dismantle. That's all. You like had, like your dad would just like acquire like hardware and materials.
You know, like sometimes, like, I think probably like secondhand stuff, you know, sometimes people get rid of old VCRs or some shit. Okay. And so like I don't recall exactly where we got them from, but like, and occasionally, you know, like we would replace our VCR, and so like yeah, on those occasions I would like dismantle those things and like examine them and try to understand how they worked and like break them down.
So interesting. I'm imagining you doing this.
But yeah, so it's like, so that was kind of like my initial interest, and I was thinking like, fucking robots, yeah. But at some point I became cognizant that like just the slightest bit realistic that like, what if robots like that won't like exist in my lifetime or something? Like maybe this is like a really far off thing. And so then I started thinking like, okay, maybe I want to make the representations of those things, right? So maybe it's like movies and stuff like that that I'm into. And I didn't necessarily have like a direction yet. I'm talking about like when I was 8 or something. But then like between then and I guess having that like extra undirected time to be creative when we started like homeschooling and stuff, like then it kind of like rapidly crystallized. I guess the other thing is like, hey, to some extent, like games also offered like an extra social outlet, because like living in like the suburban sprawl, you know, there were a couple kids around, but there weren't that many. And so it's like, you know, if I wanted to see somebody, they were like some distance away. It required like coordination. I'd have to be like driven there. And so like it was like a space, I guess, I could be like autonomous and explore in. And so that was like, yeah, and I guess to some extent there's just like the greatest level of like intellectual stimulation there. So I just like glued onto it. And glued on to like games, and I understood like, okay, this is like the most interesting thing. And then I maintained my interest because it just seems like it has the largest conceivable possibility space for like problems, because you could just like, you could stick anything into a game, right? Like Dwarf Fortress had like insane levels of simulation, right? And yeah, like it's to the extent that like people invent new technologies just to make a toy, basically. And yeah, I don't know. I think that's cool. And I think it's like a good way to explore things, right?
Yeah. Now, I think I do think games are, I'm really excited about games in general, especially in our current day and age, because it's so easy to distribute games now. It's way easier to make games now because you have all the technology that's available, and the computers, but also the software, and the language models and the engines. And I think we are the closest ever in the history of video games of like it being considered an art form. And there's like
You think it isn't considered? I don't even think about that question, honestly. Like, I don't even care what people's opinion is. I'm like, oh dude, I mean, okay, here's the question. Like really it's up to you. Like, are you making an artistic video game or like not? And then also, how do people take it, right? To me, I'm sort of like the artist is dead kind of person to an extent, because like I think that the audience you know, especially in the long term, right? Like once they actually are dead, like historically, people just kind of take it wherever it's going to go. And there's also always going to be someone who takes ironic things unironically, you know. There's going to be like weird inversions of like the symbols that you crafted and the meaning you intended for them. I mean, a classic one, both games and art. I mean, I guess it's more of a design thing, but like Monopoly, right? Like it was a thing to show how much capitalism sucks or whatever. And I just kind of like just like very unironically became super mechanized into this thing that like everybody had to like play and suffer through like a ritual, but then you were like supposed to like it. And it's like it like almost did its work, but then it was like strangely co-opted to like not, because it's like, yeah, and you like this. And like people were like, yes, I do like this. That somehow they accepted it, even though it was like miserable and everyone suffered, somehow people still agreed. Like to the brainwashing, you know, they're like, we enjoy this.
It's so funny how, but that kind of goes to show it took a long time for the game to kind of fall into this common acceptance, like this, like, I don't know, pop culture, I guess, almost. And I feel like for games, because it's such a new media compared to things like animation or filmmaking, it's just right. It's old enough now that I think our generation who grew up with games can write about it and treat it like an art form. Whereas when it was too new, it's hard for people, I think, to consider something extremely new and put it on the art pedestal, I guess. You know what I'm saying? So I think that's like a really cool and exciting thing for games. I kind of wanted to ask you a little bit about, so you went to Ringling, right? And what did you study in Ringling?
There,
Like,
I officially studied computer animation, but I also kind of like unofficially audited the game art and design classes, especially like the design ones. I was mostly interested in the design ones. So I like participated in those. I would replicate the projects. I would do the assignments, even though I like wasn't getting credit for it or anything.
oh, that's cool. So you were doing like the two
I just
curriculums,
gave myself another major. Also, I
which
was
is
like minoring in
insane.
business at first, and then I was just like, yeah, fuck that one. Like, I'm gonna let that one fall off.
And it showed too, because it's funny, like you're talking all about your like interest in mechanics and robots, because I remember your thesis film was very distinguished because you built a robot, like a transforming robot for your film. Whereas the rest of us, like, we used the setup machine, which was like a pre-existing rig that you sort of like glue your model to, and then you mod it a little bit. But for the most part, the mechanics kind of were already figured out, and we just sort of like were making a puppet out of a build-your-own puppet kit. But Angel, like, did this incredibly complex, to me at the time, thing for his computer animation thesis film. But it was like I don't know if you want to describe it, but it was like a robot that turned into shit and stuff, which
Yeah, it
was
was
like
like a robot that turned into a motorcycle. Actually, I really only ever transform it from the motorcycle into the robot. But yeah, that was fun. Yeah, I was like really in. I mean, I think it also comes from that, like, so I didn't really answer how I got into the animation in particular. So I basically, there were two 3D classes available at the community college. One was 3D modeling in Maya, and the other one was 3D animation in Maya. And as of yet, I wasn't necessarily interested in animation. So I just went straight into the modeling class. I was like, I want to make objects. Modeling makes objects. Sounds good. And, you know, so I went and did that. And then there was the other class to take. So I was like, okay, I'm going to take the next one on the list. And then, like, in that one, I got like really sucked into the animation assignments. Like, from the very first one, like, I just started like dumping tons of time and attention into it. I was just like super, super engaged. And at that time, I think I was still maintaining like that I thought I'd do like environment art because that seemed like the most direct 3D thing with the highest demand in video games and like close to level design. And then I could maybe like get into game design and stuff because at that point, that was kind of like the path for a lot of people. And or testing. This was back in the day when like you go from QA to design, which now is like not a thing.
Oh, really? Oh,
It's like
man.
very segregated, I'd say. Like, you know, there's like
Oh,
the upper class
shit.
and the lower class.
Oh, my God. Well, good to know.
Yeah, I
That's,
mean,
well, because it's like, because teams got so much bigger, I guess, because like now it's like
yeah,
it's.
it's because they're bigger. It's because now it's a department, right? Yeah, it's a department that staffs up. I mean, it obviously depends at the company, right? Like we're not like that. We don't want to be like that. But I mean, you know, as like a whole in the large studios and stuff, which, you know, like if you're asking about like, are they art? It's like, I'm fine with not necessarily calling some of those projects art. Like maybe they're some other sort of art-ish thing, a craft. I mean, I don't know. Like it doesn't have to or not have to be. Yeah, but I was gonna let me finish the thing about getting into animation. So yeah, I just started getting really sucked into it, like naturally, basically. And then similarly with rigging, because, you know, I was really interested, especially in puppets and stuff. Like as a younger kid, like winding back, I did like some stop motion stuff with like action figures, things like that. And so like, yeah, I was interested in the idea of like making the puppet and the controls. And I've always liked taking things apart too. So it's like, if you give me something to animate, like one of the first things I'm going to do is try to like break it open and see what's inside. And yeah. And so I got like really into the animation stuff, and I was like, okay, but like, I'm not going to give up on like the making games thing. So like, I guess I'm just going to figure out how like animation fits into games. Right. And then like that kind of became like the mission and the goal. And I oriented myself towards Ringling, because I just kind of looked around and I was like, okay, this is like a reputable 3D animation program. But actually at the time I thought the destruction of the California school system rears its ugly head once more. I was actually planning to transfer to Cal State Fullerton, because like I was on a path to like save money and not go to like a private art school or some shit, you know, and like be clever about it because I was informed. But that year they didn't accept any students, and I applied to Ringling basically to like, I just wanted like a baseline to see at what level I was at, because I was curious, like, am I starting at this stage for like animation stuff? Because I'd only started it like recently, like turned towards that. And I basically started drawing like after I decided I liked animating, like computer animating. And then I was like, one of my friends, I still remember the moment, I was modeling some like crazy monster thing, and he pointed out something about like the structure of part of it. And I had like kind of modeled it like a human leg. And in order to, like, I still can visualize the drawing and like how mind blown I was when I saw it. Like, he drew the contour of the upper leg, right, to like give me this note. And then he drew the lower contour. And then I saw him do like the cross section, right? Just like a little edge to indicate how the form turns. And like, I suddenly saw the form and my mind was like, I was like, whoa. And I was just like, it made such a deep impression in my brain. I was like, whoa, what is this like technology? Like you are able to so efficiently show me what I'm supposed to do. Like I'd never seen somebody draw like that. I'd seen people belabor illustrations, but I hadn't seen somebody like draw technically like that up to that point. And I was like, I need to understand this. And then like just hearing like general advice, people were like, yeah, you're supposed to be like good at figure drawing if you want to be a really good animator. I was like, all right, starting figure drawing. And that was like the beginning of my like absolute metric shitload of figure drawing I've done throughout my life. I really, really love figure drawing. Honestly, like if I could like really have it my way, or maybe like as a retirement thing, I would like to just, you know, like draw figures all day and like have some kind of figure drawing session like all day, every day when I retire. Like I just want to master drawing the human figure at some point. But yeah, so that was like the next kind of organic thing. And then that was basically my entire portfolio when I applied to Ringling. And that was one of the reasons I applied too, because I was like, I didn't have much of a portfolio. I wasn't really trying to put together things to be an artist. The whole time I was thinking about like how to put together games, how to construct games. And I was always working on mods and stuff like that, trying to learn about pipelines and dig shit into things. And so like I joined some indie projects like back when indie wasn't a thing. And so like none of these got anywhere. There are like so many like different distances of like half starts doing some design stuff, sometimes making a bunch of levels, sometimes making some gameplay stuff too, you know, just like various lengths of complete to incomplete to like prototype to not even a prototype, that like none of them got finished. And like in between that time and like Ringling, I think there were like 15 projects that were like, that just like didn't get it.
Damn.
Yeah, like 15 failed projects before I like officially started like college and the animation program and stuff, right? Like a lot of lessons, right? A good friend of mine once told me that lessons are what we get when we don't get what we want. And I didn't get what I wanted on like 15 of those occasions. But
so you know, you learned a lot of lessons. Well, yeah.
I think each one is like an opportunity to learn a lesson. You don't have to. People do fail.
Well, that is isn't failure the lesson, kind of, but I mean, like, it's interesting how you say that, because that is failure. I mean, you know, like, you're talking about, is to me, it's synonymous, right? But I don't know, maybe, like, if there's nothing to be gained from it, just effort spent, because
right.
I don't know. I have to tell myself that it's all relevant, you know what I mean? Like, even if mm-hmm. it doesn't seem...
Oh, no, I mean, I agree. I think the failures are, like, inextricably relevant, you know? Like, mm-hmm. I think we always see that. You have, like, a path that you through which you explore art. Yeah, if it just came easily, like, hey, something that's kind of funny about how people present, like, learn art material, it's always like, learn it fast, learn it how I mastered it, 5 days. And it's like, dude, God forbid you become a master that fast, because, like, that's when it gets shitty. Like, when you think you're, like, actually, like, above the level of the thing you're executing and you can do it, like, effortlessly, then, like it looks impressive to other people because you've mastered a magic trick, right? But, like,
uh-huh.
in order to, like, get better, like, you need to figure out new magic tricks, right? Like, whole new conceptions of how to present this and the narrative and all these different layers of experience.
Yeah.
It almost sounds like you're describing, I mean, yeah, but that, I don't know if that has a lot to do with sort of, like, the puzzle solving or whatever that is kind of correlated to, like, what you actually, like, do now, sort of, like, because I can't, like, if that is somehow related to kind of, like,
no, it totally is. Yeah, I like solving puzzles. It also reflects the kind of games I like, and I mean, I think even in, like, Potionomics, not that it's, like, my game, but I just mean we as a whole like puzzly stuff quite a bit.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
puzzle. I'm also kind of like a puzzle game kind of person, I guess.
Also, like, tactics and econ sims, stuff like that, you know, like spreadsheet games.
Yeah. yeah. Like, you're only in what are they called, like, Windows, and you're like, have your little cursor. But it's cool that, like, it's really cool because when you watch the trailer for Potionomics, it doesn't feel like a puzzle game. It feels like it's has so much life to it because you have a lot of characters and you have lots of different settings.
Yeah, well, actually, I should say it's because, like, the audience may not be familiar with it. It's not quite a puzzle game. It's like a crafting simulator, and, like, I guess we call it, like, a potion shop simulator. So it's about, like, running mm-hmm. the business. Also, by the way, on sale now. Go buy it. Buy it a lot.
Edit that out, V. Edit it out.
Yeah, so I didn't pay funny. For that. I didn't pay for that promo.
No, that's good.
Yeah, I think it's interesting that you talk about modding, that you were modding before school. Like, how did you mod games? Because I've just become really recently aware of what that is. I didn't know that it was a thing. What was the thing in modding that you were the most interested in? Was it, like, creating new level design? Was it, like, creating new story? Like,
kinda... a lot of the time it was, like, levels, right? I guess because, like, I played, like, mm-hmm. Age of Empires and StarCraft, and those had map editors. And then I played some Warcraft and a lot of custom maps. And through that, I got into this game called Dota, which, like, anyone that plays Dota, mm-hmm. I think fully understands the storyline there. Yeah, it's like Dota's like near lifestyle. I mean, there's a reason League of Legends is, like, such a big thing, though, right? That is, like, what spawned, like, where it spawned from. It was like a quite the interesting, like, sort of tribal phenomenon. I don't know. It's a very special kind of game. Wait, what was the last question you asked?
Yeah, I was just wondering kind of what were you most interested in modding, and what
the main thing was that it was, like, the nearest vector for getting something, like, into a game and working. And I still feel that, like, modding is, like, probably the best way to start learning about making games, because I think you learn the most, like, when you finish a thing, and, like, when you mod mm-hmm. something, you're starting with a game that's already finished. So the bar for finishing is, like, so much lower. And, like, so the mod projects were the only things I ever, like, kind of, like, finished, right? Or, like, reached to a state of completion in this mm-hmm. time when I was doing these prototypes and learning and stuff like that and trying to do these indie projects with other people. And so, like, I feel like those often, like, the indie projects, I learned a lot about, like, team stuff, right? Which mm-hmm. there's, like, a lot to know, really. There's no limit to how useful and how much knowledge you can have about, you know, like, managing social dynamics and yet keeping people working together.
What are your main takeaways? Like, I think that's really interesting.
My main takeaway is I think that good things get good because they're open. They're, like, those projects have, like, a a culture or like a team politics that allows good things to get in, right? And like lift up those good things into the core of what you're making versus just trying to like swat away like problems, right? And like, so there's this idea called like ecological learning. And it's this idea about like, I guess somewhat intuitive exploration to some extent, but oh man, I feel like the easiest way maybe to explain it would be to draw it. If you're over here and you want to get up here, right? Like let's say we have like this thing here and it like draws a curve, right? And so like if you want this curve to reach this point, right, you have to cover this distance somehow. And so there's like an intuitive thing to do would be like if you imagine raising this, then this would push up the surface. But like the idea of in like ecological learning is that you use like a tractor. So it's this idea of like almost like this ball here has like a gravitational pull rather than this thing like being forced up. So then like for example, if I have some like other curve and then like the art director says like this curve needs to be lower. Like let's say there's an animation curve. So like one of the reasons that motion capture processes were like kind of shitty initially is because people would do things like, okay, I got this note. And then they would just like cut off the top, right? And then they'd go back and try to like massage these things and kind of make it work, right? And eventually they got good at that workflow, and then they found like other ways and got like better at like simplifying animation. But like one of the reasons it was ugly is because people did it that way, right? And it's partially because the data is baked down, and so then you have to make like these hard cuts versus like just being able to like drop the handle down, right, on like a spline curve lets you make it like, you know, maintain the smoothness, maintain those kind of like other, oh, I didn't realize I was drawing two lines. The first one disappeared for a second. But it, like you can maintain the form qualities, right? And so like, I think this also speaks to this idea of like having models inside your brain, right? Like I think the most important thing is to like be able to assemble some kind of model of what's going on. And so to get back to the modding thing, right? You can build a pretty good model by playing the game, right? And so then it's just much more approachable to understand how to modify that model by working from there. And it's like kind of an intuitive thing that like kids generally want to do. So I would say that's like a good way to do it. But also I would say like probably don't do the Roblox stuff, you know?
Oh yeah? What's your take on Roblox?
I don't think it's as good for the creators as it would be to just be free of the Roblox ecosystem. I think whatever Roblox appears to offer, I think you're probably just better off not bothering, right? Like, I don't think the juice is worth the squeeze. That's it. Like, I don't think they give like good enough margins. I don't think the whole scheme is set up in a way that would, like, I just don't think it would be likely to work as a business model unless it was tilted a little unfavorably. And so for that reason, I think you're better off just like learning in an environment that allows you to learn as much as possible and like add as much good knowledge, right? Like add attractors and like and ideas about what to reach towards rather than like trying to learn like things to avoid. Like trying to learn things to avoid is like a very slow way to explore, because then also you have to be kind of cautious, you know? It's like,
oh yeah, so you're saying like what you learn modding is that you want to learn because you're excited about where you can go rather than learning because you just keep hitting walls and you have a defensive kind of learning where you're
and just, also like even if you think about it technologically, like you don't want to just be learning how to like keep the engine running. Like you want to learn how to like make the stuff, how to design it, how to make decisions that affect the player's experience. So I think like, you know, if you want to learn design, you should start there, because that's the the closest thing that lets you like actually meaningfully affect the design.
Yeah, it's would you say, this is going to be a crazy comparison, but would you say game modding is kind of like writing fan fiction?
Yeah, totally. Totally. 100%. Yeah.
There's the analogy.
I think they're great writing and music analogies to making video games, for sure.
Oh yeah, it would be kind of like doing a remix of a popular song. Yeah, those are fun too.
Yeah, there's a lot about video games. It's like a remix culture too, right? It's like everybody recycling mechanics to a great extent, right? And components and ideas and structures and even goals, right? It's like pretty much all games have some idea of like points, health, stuff like that. money, right? If it's not just like abstract points, or often they'll have money and some kind of abstract points, and like people's brains tend to go absolutely gaga over a number that they think it matters whether it goes up or down. Like, man, if you can convince somebody that that number ticking up or down is a big deal, they will just go bananas over it.
That's crazy, and it's kind of true, and that's kind of what you
Well,
see in
it's true in like many dimensions, right? Like, I think that's
finance
like the
and
reason
stuff.
money is like dangerous, or that people say it's evil, right? It's because like when your brain gets fixated on that like number in that account, yeah, it's like it can be a wild ride of anxiety, I guess, and other things.
That's so true. I want to ask you a little bit about what was your experience like when you graduated Ringling? What did you
Job
do
hunting.
after school?
Well, the first thing I did was sit my ass down because I had given myself a hernia, and felt like my intestine was sliding out of place, and I had to chill my ass out for a little while and wait to have my operation. Then it took a while to recover and stuff. And so during that time, during that summer, immediately after, I tried to exploit that as much as possible and just do like a ton of studying and just like drawing and painting and like just like fundamental stuff that I always wanted to do even more of in school, but there are just like so many projects to do that like you didn't always have time for that kind of mass of work, right? Especially like figure drawing. Like I was figure drawing like continuously every semester for all 4 years, as well as like the 2 years beforehand, right? And then afterwards I kept that up. Yeah, just trying to get good, and it took me a while, takes a lot of work. Also, there's like so many dimensions of like design that you can learn about, right, within drawing. But yeah, it's like I said, so when I introduced the idea, like the moment when I decided drawing mattered, like it's just an amazing like analytical tool, right? It lets you like yeah, lets you like grow your brain and grow your understanding of stuff and like clarify your vision and even and like your I mean like your internal vision, right? Like your third eye of imagining what is supposed to be in front of your physical eyes. I kind of think of things in terms of like you have your eye, and you have your like internal mind and thought process, and then you have like your hand, right? And those are kind of like the three things that you need to train. And so like luckily with games, because partially because they're experiential, I feel like to some extent they kind of train your they successfully train your mind using your eyes and your hands at the same time, because like you're engaging with the actions and like just like moving things along, right? Moving along whatever sequence of actions is like value in the context of the little world that you invent. I segue it again.
No worries. I was kind of wondering, like, how did you land your first gig, and what was your first gig? And when I'm saying gig, it's like the one thing that started helping you pay the bills, you
Yeah,
know?
so the first thing was basically after recovering from the hernia bit and the operation and stuff like that, I did some like freelance work for Intel. I think that was when I started that project. And then otherwise, my goal was to spend those couple months right after getting out of school just improving some of my fundamental skills, and then like hit the ground running with an indie game, right? Like I had friends that I had like teamed up with in college, and we had made some prototypes and stuff, and we were like, okay, let's like make a full-fledged fucking game. Let's do it. And so yeah, I just tried to do that. But yeah, it was hard to really make it happen. Yeah, it'd be like a whole story to get into that. I'm not sure like what's the briefest way, but just like one more in the long list of things that like found some reason to not work out, right? And just like too much friction to keep it moving consistently. I think that's really the main thing. Like with all of these, it's like projects die when they lose inertia. I think it's like really, really, really all about inertia. Because like if it stops and you have to restart it, you're essentially making a new project, in my opinion. It's just starting from the material of the last one. But like it's almost like its life, the life of that project, like no longer exists, right? It concluded, right? And now this is another one that is being constructed from those materials. Yeah, so it was that one with Intel. And basically that was like through one of the friends that I was working on the game with who worked at Intel. And that was also one of the things distracting him from the game project that was like making it challenging, because like he went and got a job, and I was just like, no, nah, I'm gonna like just commit to like this prototype and stuff and try and make some things, and we're gonna try and get funding. Like, I was ready to just like go, go, go. Right. And then that didn't work out. And so then I was like looking for work. I did some, I mean, I don't even remember, just like a couple different odd little like freelance jobs. And then eventually I got like a contract at EA. And so then that was like kind of a thing I did for like, I don't know, 2 years, I guess. Not like continuously, because it was like a 9 month contract the first time and then a year long one the second time. So there was like a little interval.
Was that also because I remember, and we glossed over this, but you had interned there, right? As an undergraduate.
Yeah, that's right. I interned there during school. Yeah.
And what was the nature of the work for Intel and EA? Were you?
Both was like, well, so at EA, that was just like motion capture animation on the sports games. Well, at that point, it was just like NBA, NBA Live. The one with better animation, by the way, but worse gameplay. But I wasn't responsible for the gameplay, so. Yeah, but so, yeah, at EA, it was like doing motion capture stuff. And that was when I kind of started finally like animating professionally more consistently. Because for that, like the Intel thing involved like rigging and animation. And a bunch of the freelance work was like more rigging oriented. It's just like, there's more demand for it, you know. It's a more technical skill. And it is what it is. But like I kind of still wanted to like be animating, like personally animating, setting keys, making poses and stuff. And so I did the EA thing, and that was okay. But like I was real restless, you know. I wanted to make game, and not like the way it was there, right? That was remaking the same thing, right? That was reconstructing and improving on something, which is like a fine thing to do or whatever. But it wasn't like the kind of like creative expression that I wanted, you know. And also because I had always had it in my head to be making indie games, right? But like I said, like I hit the ground running with the indie game stuff because I did it before, but I didn't just do it before because it was the easiest thing to do. I felt that was like the right way to do it. And I still feel that way. And part of it was I read this thing by some obscure indie game dev. He's done a couple GDC talks, and it's just his name is skipping my mind now, unfortunately. But he made this quirky, odd little RPG with like free open source, just like really not like aesthetically impressive graphics, let's put it that way. But you know, this guy was like making a living off of it. And I remember like I stumbled upon his website, and he kind of explained his whole like structure and the structure of his business and stuff like that. And so that was what like got it into my head. Like, really, I was like, okay, there's like a way to make this happen. Right. So I read really that cool. At some point, like in around like high school years, like when I was at Palomar. And that like formulated and made concrete my goal of like, okay, even if I like want to go like work on AAA stuff maybe for a while or something like that, like my goal is to make like indie games and make a studio and stuff. And also because I felt like I still feel like that's like the real soul of like making games, is like making a project with and a team and a company together, I guess. Like,
yeah,
I mean, I wish there was more like of like an incubation thing, but that doesn't really seem to be a reality. No one wants to like make something in-house and then let it go. They want to like make things in-house and then control them. But it's like,
yeah,
that environment doesn't seem to actually like produce a whole lot of new things a lot of the time, right? It seems to be, yeah, just like not conducive, right? Not conducive to the freshness and style, because that stuff I think comes from like putting your experiences in and like, you know, things about people, you know. Yeah, like human qualities, right? Human qualities, relating your experience into like the art and the decisions about the art and the characters. So yeah, that was like the continuation of like my work experience. And then basically, yeah, so I did that for a bit, but I was pretty restless. I did some freelance work on other indie games a little bit, just obscure stuff you guys wouldn't recognize, honestly. I'm like blanking on the names. I should like open up my website or something so I can like pretend I know my resume. But to be frank, everything before Potionomics just like feels kind of trivial. They all feel like projects rather than like games. I don't consider them like mine. I don't see a sense of ownership in the same way. I mean, I guess there's ownership over the ones that were like just my idea that didn't make it, but also didn't make it. So it's like whatever. And also old ideas, I'm fine with like leaving them behind. There's always something new. I don't think it's like critical to dwell on some particular idea I had at some point and like that one has to be the one or that one has to exist, you know. I want to be flexible and like I said, I try to think of it as like reaching toward something rather than trying to like avoid problems, right?
Yeah,
like, I just want to reach towards like something new.
Yeah, that's really interesting. And I kind of wanted to ask you, when you were talking about you were trying to raise money for some of your indie projects, what were the avenues you explored?
Oh man, there were different situations. I mean, at that point, a lot of it was like trying to meet people at GDC who were like connected to publishing and stuff like that. There weren't like a ton of conduits. The main thing was like really, I mean, even now it's like you kind of need a prototype in order to pitch anything. So at that point, it was really just about like mostly finding a team that could like really put together a prototype. Because like that's actually pretty hard, right? Especially making something like really, really new. Like I said, if you're not starting with like an existing baseline, it's quite difficult. And even Potionomics, like originally we were just like trying to make Reseteer but prettier. Like that's this other game that's like older and it had some other features like dungeon crawling and stuff like that. But we as a whole don't feel like that really added things to the game. And so we're just like, okay, we want to make it about this focused aspect of it and just do that.
I feel like, it's interesting that you mentioned that, because I do feel like starting from having like a main inspiration that you kind of start from and then kind of modify and then eventually it becomes your own is, I for some reason as a kid or like, a student, I used to kind of look down on that. But I feel now as a professional, like this is the best way to be the most creative, because you don't have to build everything from nothing. And I think when you're like starting from a complete like void, it's like paralyzing. And it's so much easier to start with some sort of foundation, even if later down the line you destroy all of the foundation and you make it something new. And I think that's really inspiring to hear that you guys kind of all kind of vibed on the same game, because it also helps to build a team if you're like, hey, this is the main inspiration for this, and everybody's like, I love this thing, and then you have some common grounds.
Yeah, that was very much what it was. That was very much what it was. Like I just kind of ran into Jadi coincidentally at one GDC, after we'd both graduated and stuff and been kind of doing some things for a couple years. And he had like a couple illustrations and he's like, yeah, I've been making like this prototype for a game. It's called Potionomics, blah, blah, blah. And I was like looking at it and he had some artwork that Hope had done. And like we also gone to school with Hope. And I was just like, yeah, dude, this has like some soul and inspiration. And also like I felt like I get it, and I think the other people that are doing stuff look like they get it too. They get the inspiration and the idea, and they're on board with like the experiential goal. And sometimes you can just kind of feel it. And I was like, okay, this is and in general, I'm very open to at least then when I had more time, right, and flexibility. Now I'm pretty committed to this thing, but in general, I was very open to just like trying stuff, hopping on to projects and trying to contribute, right? Wherever there were some kind of like opportunities, especially if they seemed like serious. And this one had like a lot of inspiration. I felt like I could see like obvious ways that I could excel, basically, right? Like just it was like clear to me that like I know how to improve this for sure. And I get how to improve it the right way. Yeah, I think that was also important to us when we were looking for like subsequent people, I think, right? To like preserve that. And make sure like that was one of the criteria by which we selected Emily as an animator, even though she had like basically like no experience. She'd like interned for a couple months after graduating, but otherwise I was just like, dude, like we did the animation test and she was like the only person that like actually followed the instructions and like with the priority order that I like described. And I was like, dude, she just like gets the notes, she fills out the instructions, and like it seemed like she got like the vibe and the feeling of it, even though she like wasn't necessarily somebody that like played a ton of games and also like didn't have a ton of animation experience. I just felt like it seemed very clear to me that this person had like the right like mindset and perspective that we could like learn how to do the things correctly together, right? Because I think really like you're always like learning and teaching yourself and discovering how to do things, right? And I felt like, okay, this is somebody I can like communicate with, and we can like make it through this journey of discovery together.
That's so sweet. That's a great tip for people interviewing, I think, showing that you can under you You understand the project and you're excited about it, and you're excited to bring to the table your special skills and how you can improve the project. I
Yeah,
think.
I mean, I think that's also one of those things where like your artistic diversity makes a huge difference for that. I think in Emily's case, the thing that worked in her favor was like, she actually, it's funny, she wasn't even trying to be an animator. She really like wants to be an illustrator, and like now she's like learning modeling more so. She just like happens to be good at it, you know? She happens to be able to like follow the process and fucking learn. Yeah, exactly. Like,
Really good, I'd say too.
yeah, dude, it's just like it really is about the like learning process you follow, right? And like I said, I saw it, I felt like she got it, and I said like, okay, this person's gonna be able, like, we're gonna be able to get through this learning process like together effectively, right? Because it just seemed like, yeah, like I said, she got the notes and she filled them in, like, in she fulfilled them in the way that was expected, right? And then when I compared that to like how other people responded to the notes, and also like I number them. I was only putting four notes, right? Because I wanted to be like very clear, and I would number them in order. And like a huge, astounding number of people did not fulfill them in order, even though I like explicitly said like, look, this is like the priority, and this is why. Again, for whatever reason, they just elected to kind of like do some different things. Like some people did like number two and four. One person did like fully did like a whole pass on like note four, which I think was like something about overlap. He just like put overlap everywhere. And then barely touched note three, and like nothing changed about like the main two things that I wrote down. I was like, bro, what conversation are we having here? But also I understand, like, frankly, we don't like test anymore. We just like, if we think we can work with somebody, we give them like an initial contract and like just work with them. Because like, yeah, that stuff is like free work, and also it's like kind of a waste of time, because then you have to like check it and like give feedback and iterate. And it's like, you might as well just do real work with the person at that point. You're just like pretending to do work that then you're also not allowed to use. It's like, dude, just like pay them to get real work. Like, if it's good, then you'll be happy you did, right? And also, it like, I think makes you kind of take the decision more seriously, right? I think there was like a point in time where, especially in the game industry, it's like really about what you can prove. But like at some point, it was like kind of crazy. Like, to get like any job, you'd have to like do some kind of a test. And I feel like it was this sort of thing, like, hey, you had to like really have like things pre-prepared for each one and be able to just kind of like modify and submit something, or to just have like made the perfect thing for that studio. But it's like, that's such a huge investment, you know? Like making like a full end-to-end asset or character or something, basically on any level that's like impressive enough to get you hired, is like a huge, huge investment. Having to do like a custom one for each one.
Yeah, that's kind of that's also happened in the animation industry where it's like people are like they were testing a lot before. I mean, there are like definitely pluses and minuses about that, and I think you really highlighted them in a very efficient way where it's like, well, you could just hire that person as a freelancer or like for a task and then you pay them so they're not wasting their time, but then you can figure out whether or not you it's working or it's going to work on the long term. But that's crazy that like it's man all these gig work, it's like not only is it a gig, but on top of that, you have to test to get the gig. It's like as if you were just like hired to make sandwiches like for an event, but they were like, no, we want you to make our sandwich for us first before we can hire you to make sandwiches for the game for the I don't know, the football event or whatever. And it's like, this is insane. This is
I get
crazy.
your metaphor. I'm picking up what you're putting down.
And it's all too easy for it to become like exploitive or unethical or whatever, and then just like a waste of everyone's time. And I guess,
Also, nobody ever respects artists. Like, just for real, it's astounding. It's just like, oh man.
But I kind of want to talk also about what it was like working with a small team on Potionomics and what it was like, getting all of the positive reception for the game and, kind of. Because you guys have been working on it kind of like closed circuit for like a ton of years, right? Is there doubt? Is there like how is that emotionally, that ride?
I mean, for real, that gets difficult. It's, I mean, a lot of making something happen, especially in like, the challenging circumstances of just trying to like bootstrap an indie game, a lot of it is about like commitment, like you need to be like really, really committed, because there's just like an endless potential stream of like challenges and barriers and stuff like that. It's like, things are more accessible, but like not in a way that really makes it that much easier. I think, you know, it just gets competitive to the proportion that it gets more accessible, right? That's the thing. So it never really changes, in my opinion. I
And
think it's
it
always just like challenging.
takes longer than you always anticipate, because I remember you
Yeah.
expressing like, I didn't think that I'd be still on this, like what it was like a year and a half or so right before. It was like I thought it would be done in like 2 years, but then it took like 5 years or whatever.
Yeah.
But I guess I anything like I guess I see that like with a lot of like these indie games or whatever. It's like you just
Yeah.
sort of, I guess, can't think about like the necessary steps that like entail and like the time that that consumes. But then in the end, especially with a game that people interact with and use, it's a very personal kind of media, and all that time and whatever sort of makes it worth it because it's like forever. And I know you're still like fine-tuning it and things like that, but like it's like, yeah, like a special catered like thing that is sort of like it's important to invest that kind of care, I suppose, but
Yeah,
it's
dude, totally.
definitely,
I mean,
you know.
that was, I think that, like, thinking about that kind of stuff was one of the things that kept me, like, committed to it, because, you know, I felt like it mattered, you know. And I think like the biggest crises of confidence are usually when people think like, oh, will this matter? And it's like, you know, I think to some extent your commitment is what decides whether it matters, right? Like, if you're able to, like, fulfill that alone, and you're, like, willing to see it through, you know, like,
I think so.
I mean, I think it's one of these things where it's about like how earnest of an effort it really is, right? Like, it's not just about like working like hard. It's about like really having something to say, you know? Yeah. I mean, oh man, that sounds so like abstract and wishy-washy, but like I really do think it's important, right? Like, because it comes down to, like I said, like commitment, and you know, motivation is part of that, but like no one thing is enough to guarantee that like your level of commitment is enough, right? Like, there's gonna be a lot of challenges. I don't think anyone's trying to make it any easier anytime soon, really. Like, you know, there are things that facilitate it. Like, I mean, yeah, do we want to talk about AI?
Oh
Shit.
God.
Yeah,
Well,
we
I
could have a discussion about AI because I feel like we haven't really talked about it on Creative Block yet.
Oh, hell yeah, let's do
Let's
this.
get into it.
Oh.
I know I kind of go back and forth because sometimes I'm like, oh man, down in the dumps. But other days I'm like, AI is not all that. Like, I just watched a really funny reel of a it's like a skit, right? It's a comedian. I was just like pretending to be a client, and he's like, ChatGPT, get me draw me like a bowl of ramen. And it's unable to give just a bowl of ramen without the chopsticks. And the comedy is that, you know, the comedian
Right.
gets angrier and angrier because he tries every possible way to prompt the AI, and it just gives more
Well,
chopsticks.
yeah, I think the thing about AI right now is like, you know, in my opinion, these like image generator things are like not really going to cut it for essentially that exact fundamental reason. It's because like what that really indicates is it kind of reminds us what the data set is that it's trained on, right? The data set is trying to associate it is like a, you know, vector association between the words used to describe these things and the images themselves. However, the words, who are the words coming from? They're just like some comments on the internet and stuff. Like, how sophisticated is this language going to be for describing what you actually want? Like, it doesn't matter if you talk to it like a pro art director. I think I count as a pro art director. And like, I mean, I've like fucked around a little bit, maybe not enough, but like, I don't think I'm really capable of like controlling it. I don't think it understands the way I like model and express stuff, because it's about like a model in my head that I have to communicate sort of dynamically, right? Like, you could train it to replicate it, and that's fine, but it's only ever going to be wallpaper level, because it doesn't have intent, right? And it's like you're always going to have a person for that design intent. So like, fundamentally, my attitude about the thing is like, you know, it can definitely be used for bad, because
Oh yeah.
technology, because it's powerful, and power doesn't care about like good or bad. But then like, ultimately, these things aren't about good or bad. They're about like trade-offs, right? And it's a question of like, what kind of trade-offs are we trying to make? Like, you know, like, I think, oh, I wanted to get to one point, and then I got a little sidetracked with like another one. Let me think about how to phrase this. Okay, so yeah, I guess, so to me, it's like there's this idea fundamentally that like, it's gonna take our jobs, and people are like, oh, but don't be a Luddite. Now, like the Luddites are kind of like misunderstood, right? They weren't just trying to like smash machines and stuff. They had like some sophisticated thoughts about what they thought they were owed and why they thought they were owed it, right? Because you have to remember these machines, just like these AIs, are always like this isn't different actually, right? It's always trained on the techniques of like artisans that like explore using materials and structuring stuff, and then we simplify and streamline those constructions to just the necessary bits for our engineering projects, right? Like the first foundries that made that casted like guns, cannons, artillery pieces and stuff like that were bell foundries, right? It was the technology to make bells, and I bet you probably also the fact that like it's like a resonating object affected their ability to like really learn how to do that well and like control the metallurgy and stuff like that and control like the different parameters of it, because like otherwise that bell cracks, right? And you can like literally hear things about the qualities of the bells, right? And so like yeah, there's always some like period of like artistic stuff and creation and innovation and exploration that then gets systematized into these like schematics. And I think it's important to remember that, like, I like, in my opinion, jobs are never going to go away, because like jobs are not the tasks we currently have to do. Jobs are expectations we have of people that they won't fulfill unless we give them money. And people will always be able to imagine new expectations for each other, right? Like that's not, there's no limit to that, because the limit is just however many people there are to expect something.
That's kind of the Bertrand Russell. That's where he was wrong, because he thought that technological innovation was going to allow people to work less, and it's like, oh, that's not how it works. We just get more technology so we can work more.
Yeah, I mean, I think it only ever changes the mode of work, right? It changes like what actions you're doing.
But it's
And
just like you're going to be
otherwise, like you're still
expected.
doing art, you're still composing things. Like ultimately it's always about like design and composition, right? That's always what you're doing. You're just doing it with like different tools and different ways. And right now the reason this is problematic, I think it's a lot like the VHS stuff, right? There's this whole thing about like the property rights of like, oh, people can record stuff from the TV now, right? Like we can't control the distribution, and we can't make sure we get our money for the distribution that's happening, right? And like that's like the same problem here, right? Like I think the issue is like, hey, there's some people who are like are not artists, and they're trying to not be artists, who are currently in control of like potentially useful art making tool or maybe art analytical tool. Like I don't know exactly what the possibilities are, but like some powerful little instrument. But right now it's in the hands of people who are trying to avoid being artists. And I think when we look at the early days of 3D, to the extent that some people did 3D because they didn't feel like they could handle 2D animation, that wasn't good work either, right? And 3D did not obfuscate the need to like learn to draw, right? Like the existence of motorcycles does not make the existence of bicycles pointless, right? Like I think it's kind of the more important part is like thinking about like preservation, like to the extent that this craft matters, we should try to promote some sort of conservation for it. That's not just tied to like corporate property, right? That's like separated from that, because it's cool for Disney that they have the Disney Vault, but it's kind of uncool that they can just shut things away whenever,
Do they still do
especially
that?
because that affects like available ideas and like it's like a technology, right? Like your ability just to see it gives you an opportunity to analyze it and make measurements and learn stuff about it and dissect it. And so like even thinking about that theme, like to me the more interesting thing about like AI is like how it could be potentially useful to like help us learn, right? And help us like even like I want an AI that helps me like analyze my style, like what are really like the fundamental features of my of this like style that I put down in some set of images, right? Or one that lets me like create some kind of like dynamic parameters and stuff to fiddle with things, because they can do all sorts of sophisticated warping and manipulation and stuff. It's like that's cool. Why can't I get like a bunch of dynamic tools that work more fluidly? Like, wouldn't it be nice if we could use this great curve interpolating, because fundamentally they're like just interpolating like these curve edges basically. That's kind of like they store everything as a bunch of vectors, right? And so it's like man, shouldn't it be killer at like tweening animations? Like what if we could bring back 2D animation? Because now you can just like draw all your keys, and then you can, like obviously you'll get like a less quality, less creative breakdown, but then ideally you would also have tools to follow up on that and improve it. Like I think the weird thing here is like people are trying to avoid doing art using this replication tool, but they don't understand that like the art stuff is like the new stuff. The old stuff is an artifact, right? Like it's now part of the historical record, and so replicating it infinitely like just isn't going to work, right?
I wonder if I think the problem right now with AI or like the technology of AI is that it's a little bit of a black box and people can't truly learn it. So people who are using AI to create art online, like the AI browser or whatever, like they don't understand it either. They just get excited that they can make pictures. But ideally, if artists were to use AI for themselves, then we would need to be taught more in depth how it works so we can make it work for us. Because that's kind of what happened with Photoshop. It's like, well, once we learned how to use Photoshop and how to run scripts with it, and it can really speed up our pipeline or like our workflow. But right now, I don't know if AI allows artists to, it feels a little bit like Apple, where they give you a product and they're like, use it, and you can't do anything with it. You know what I mean?
I mean, obviously there's a barrier to entry, right? And I mean, there was a barrier to entry when 3D became a thing, right? You needed some kind of fucking workstation computer. Like, even the people that had computers were not necessarily prepared to like be doing those kinds of tasks on their PC, even if it was like tricked out, you know? So like, or just the things you could do would be limited. Right.
Yeah.
And that was like a hard limitation. That was actually one of the things that made it hard to even get a job, because it was hard to even like generate something that was anywhere near the level of like quality that people were actually looking for. I mean, yeah, and the main thing is like people are trying to use it to like cleverly copy paste stuff and pretend they're not copy pasting. Right. That's the thing. People are using stuff that doesn't belong to them and trying to hide it in this little black box and pretend. You know, and like sort of gloss over where they got it from and who it belongs to and such. And that's not cool. And, you know, we should sue the shit out of them. And people are working on that. Good work, Carla. You know, actually, I'm gonna pretend to take partial credit, because like I definitely, she was like posting some stuff on Facebook about it very early on. And I responded like very early. I was like, I think the only way is a class action lawsuit. And then later, boom, fucking called it, class action lawsuit. And, you know, it looks like it's getting some work done. So cool. I doubt that it was actually just because of that comment. I'm sure other people suggested
I think as soon as people started realizing that their use was their work was being used without their consent, then there was like a little bit of like probably some communities that started thinking and being active on it. And obviously, unfortunately, the amount of money that's required to go to court for these issues kind of requires companies. So thankfully, the New York Times is doing that for us now.
Well, on this one occasion, you know, we'll see. Because right now we align, so we'll see in the future.
Exactly. But I mean, ideally, because that's kind of what Sean and I, we say is like, if eventually an artist could license out a library of images in the same way. But you know, Getty Images is also, I forget if it's Getty Images or like Shutterstock, but one of them is suing as well, because they make money from having all these images to be used to be licensed out, and AI is using these images without paying for them.
It's very clear that their examples are in the data set, you know,
and it's literally one to one. So like I think for like the Shutterstock and Getty Image, that's kind of our best bet, because their business model is literally licensing out images. So if these images are getting taken without being paid for, you cannot be more clear cut than that in terms of copyright infringement. I think it's a little bit harder when it's like an artist posting their work on Twitter. Like obviously my personal belief is that you should still be able to sue and get your copyright money, but it's a little bit harder to prove in the court, I think, compared to Shutterstock or Getty Images, because they have all
that's
of
the whole technique, right?
It's
like that in every phase of like industrializing processes, right? Things that were craft and like artistic practices of the people get turned into these like mechanized processes. The soul sucked out of them, and yeah, it's just like another phase of that happening here, basically, I think, right? It's like I think we'll probably end up with like some layer of the internet that's just like AI generated stuff being watched by AI like viewers, you know, like just the like cycles of garbage content.
I think that's where I get really worried, or like I feel like I'm staring into the abyss. It's like, oh no, like my biggest concern about AI is that it's going to ruin the internet, and that the internet is going to become
Well, I think we already passed the tipping point.
It's in the process. I mean, I still find value on the internet. I still think there is value there, but I'm worried that it's going to get to a point where there is so much shit content that it's not going to be worth it to find the valuable content in all the shit. Is kind of what I'm worried about.
I think we'll end up with like a couple walled gardens across the internet that have the good stuff, and people mostly don't venture into the rest of it. I think it'll be something like that.
Here's like
the
Google.
Thing. I would argue this actually started. So one of the benefits of, you know, my parents and the computer stuff and the internet is like, I remember like the earliest days. And so like, I asked questions about it, and like, you know, people forget that the internet was like a government owned project, right? Like three networks, like ARPANET, DARPANET, and Usenet, I think. I forget what the third one was. But so like, you know, it used to be between like all these universities and stuff. And like, even back then, like the military types apparently were like spying on these like students using it. And there's this kind of sentiment of like, oh, man, people, all these kids want to do some like hippy dippy shit with this. And then like over time, you know, somebody suggested the idea, like, okay, maybe it's time to privatize this, right? Like maybe it's time to like essentially sell real estate on this and allow business, allow advertising and stuff. And like early on, what was the coolest thing about the internet? There was less advertising. It wasn't like TV where you were hosted and now they've made you hosted. TV went through the same transformation. And before that, it was radio. And before that, it happened with print. It's just like, we just kind of keep repeating this, like we'll make a mass of like good stuff. And then we keep repeating this mistake of like not quite understanding how to like take care of that like accumulation, and then like not start filling it in with junk. Not even that all the classic stuff is like good or whatever, right? I'm just saying, like a bunch of it was junk too, right? But the idea is that like you'd leave behind a structure that allows the junk to fall away, right? That like clears a path through so it can be a living organism that continues to grow.
I think it's also just like I think it's the amount of it. It felt like before, in the early days of the internet, it was also a little bit more, what's the word? Like you had more agency. Like you had to find the URL and you had to like punch it in. Whereas now you just have a couple of website where you just click, 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 and you're not as engaged with the content as before, because you're not putting in as much effort to just kind of waste your time on the internet. And it just kind of feels like before you were just walking into like a messy room, but you could find your way around it. Whereas now it feels like you're just walking into a landfill. You know what I mean? It's like the scope of it.
If you think about like the scale increase with each one of those, it's like how many books were there suddenly? Then it's like how many newspapers were there suddenly? And then, but now it's like the scale of stuff there is, it's just like, it's just it's like a nonstop flood, right? I mean, that's why it's a stream, it's a content stream, right? We've officially made like rivers of this stuff.
Yeah, exactly. Well, let's go into some questions, because we have a lot of questions for you. So from our patron Puzzle Glum, how does one with no experience in 3D best learn rigging? Where'd you start?
Ooh, rigging. I mean, you could look up Cult of Rig. It's like pretty technical. So if you're not comfortable with that stuff, you know, that may be a little bit of a hard start. There's this other guy, Carlos Sansonetti. He made these videos for Gnomon that I learned a lot from. And he has some other videos on CG Circuit. Those seem pretty good. I would say, I mean, probably, you know, start small, right? Like always try to reduce it to like the smallest tractable example. And imagine that you're going to have to do this thing like a dozen times, right? About a dozen times at least to like figure out how it is, right? And then like if you haven't learned by the dozenth time, then maybe think about other approaches. But, you know, you're going to have some patience for that, right? To get through some number of examples before you really start to be like, okay, I know where these things are. I know where the buttons are. I get the kind of like ideas behind this. And then, you know, it doesn't hurt to, you know, learn some math, especially linear algebra. Trig is good too, just in like graphics stuff and video games across the board. Also rigging, because rigs are basically like matrix transformation software, like under the hood. That's like what you're kind of doing. Just make like a hierarchy of all these transforms, and then you're just computing matrices a bunch with these like physical metaphors, kind of, right? Yeah, so I would say that kind of stuff, you know, and then ideally like find community, you know, like, so yeah, like find something to start getting into the base. I would recommend this as a structure for like learning most stuff, really, like find something to get into some basics, right? But also don't get too glued to them, because eventually you'll find out that like the basics are probably nonsense, but for like weird reasons that you can't understand early on. But you know, allow yourself to absorb the basics, then like try and find like community and ask for help as you try to get through like intermediate level challenges. Just like increase the complexity one like dimension at a time. You know, it's like, okay, now we're gonna do some IK, now we're gonna switch it on and off, now we're gonna, you know, like add feature by feature, and then yeah, and then like look at other people's work, right? Compare yours to theirs and try to see what your level is at, right? Like I said, like that was why I applied to Ringling in the first place, right? It was just to see that. And then they defunded the other school. So I was like, okay, this is the option. Or I just wait an unknown number of years till the school can let me in.
Gosh, that stuff was so hard for me to grasp. And I feel like at Ringling, the people who were good already kind of, like you sought it out yourself. I know that they like did fundamental rigging classes, but my brain, I like never could quite get it right.
Well, I don't feel like back then they really taught rigging very well. I don't know what it's like now, but like, that was something that was like kind of, you know, definitely not an emphasis, and they definitely didn't mind if people like didn't really understand it. They just wanted people to get through the task and feel comfortable like hitting the buttons, I think.
It was tough, but
yeah, that's always a tough way to do anything too, right? To just be like dropped in and just have like a manual and be like, follow these instructions, do not deviate, or things will go catastrophically wrong.
And like, for me, it's like a chemical recipe, and if I screw up, I'll make mustard gas. But then every tutorial is a little bit different, and I'm like, you know, someone who can't speak the language, so I have to follow the exact recipe, but then every other tutorial is a little bit different, and it's like, to me, totally anti-intuitive, but I guess you have to have a curiosity for the rigging itself. And for me, I didn't, like, I guess, like, that's the thing, you have to want to be the puppet maker, and I just wanted to be the puppeteer, you know, like, and so I guess there's a difference in like values that sort of incentivizes you to want to do that. And I guess you know, baby steps, learn how to like chisel before you learn how to like screw and what actually, I don't know how to make a puppet. See, that's like, I can't even make an analogy. That's how foreign and alien it is to me. But yeah,
it's okay, it works. I get you. I feel you with the chiseling and screwing.
I just made mustard gas with puppet strings on it and poison all the children in the puppet theater. That's what I do. But
wow, that took a dark turn.
sorry, like I just keep thinking about it as a sophisticated, it's like a big old giant expensive camera, but you still need a guy that like understands that power. But I guess if it's like a button you press, it can still do harm. But the fact that it's a pattern, and I'm like going back, but like the fact that we can identify it as a pattern, and we saw how those other patterns play out, allows myself to believe that, you know, it'll evolve. But it might have to do a little bit with this lawsuit and things like that. Might be kind of like the catalyst to help.
Oh, definitely.
You know,
I think there's such a thing as a healthy amount of lawsuits. You know, like especially when it's like these corporations, you gotta spank them into just like it, like you should be gentle to people. But like when it's these entities, especially because responsibilities are ambiguous in those organizations, you got to be real aggressive to make sure that people feel like, oh, if I'm in this driver's seat when this happens, those consequences could pass on to me. And this could be some shit, right? You got to be willing to like defend that. And I think that's good.
Yeah. And hopefully that'll happen. But not to derail, I don't know if there's other questions that you want to get to. And if
there's a couple of good ones. I'm just going to give a quick shout out to some questions that we might not have the time to get to. Ninja Panda 39.3, thank you so much for your question. This one's kind of fun. Punkle 2463 asks, would you ever try to make a VR game?
Maybe. It's like low on the list of priorities. Like it'd be interesting, but it just adds so much complexity when the viewer has stereoscopic vision. Like a big part of the animation direction of Potionomics was controlling things into like a tighter frame, right? Mm. So that we had more understanding of exactly how the viewer is seeing all of the animations, so we can really make like the poses nice and to camera and shape them and make them distinguished from each other. And that's just dear God, that's such an escalating level of complexity when the person has two eyeballs to take in information with. Like, it's not twice the information. It's like information, like, to the tenth at least, right?
And the technology is also maybe not as available as like a regular screen, right? So you're
Right.
kind
Also,
of
like, the adoption is very low. It's very, very low. There's not a really great incentive for it. Like, it'd be neat, but yeah, it's all right. Also, the other thing is, like, I don't necessarily feel like I need to make something that's like more immersive. I want to make something that's like better designed, and that doesn't really rely on
Oh, yeah.
VR. And making it as accessible as possible means like probably VR is less of the way because you need to be inside of it. It's always going to have that slight accessibility barrier. And I'm just in favor of like I want to like inspire people to live their lives and do cool shit and stuff, you know? Like, so it's good for that to be accessible, right? Like, I think accessibility is like a large part of the holy grail of games, you know. Like, to me, like, Tetris is like a perfect game because it's like so self-contained and it can always fulfill its promise of like how it's supposed to function. It can like almost play itself, right? It has this like interesting reflective quality. And like, have you heard of the Tetris effect? Like, they tried to test memory of, I forgot what it was, but they had a control group of amnesiacs. And unfortunately, the amnesiacs remembered playing Tetris. And it was this like kind of like wild result that got like a little bit of attention. Like, whoa, Tetris is like so addictive. It gets in your brain, even if you can't, like, you know, even if you have amnesia. And it's because there's some kind of like a working intuitive memory from when you're like actually doing actions, right? And so to me, that's like the essence of games and play. Like, VR isn't requisite for that, right? And then like real life is already VR. So like just make a real life game. Like real
Yeah,
life is
kind
already a
of
better version of the
actually.
video game. It's only going to be even better than the VR version of the video game, in
that's
my opinion. That's kind of how I see it, right? Like I don't think we should look at the Matrix unironically and be like, yeah, let's have the simulation be ever like, no. Life is beautiful, nature, flowers, people, you know, like, I don't know.
That's really funny. I think we kind of glossed over this next question, but I think it could be, if you still have time, I think that would be kind of cool to get a little like bullet point list for this. At Hank Humble 3552 asks, what is your experience with networking and getting your name known? So you kind of talked about GDC.
Yeah, I mean, for me, it's mostly like showing up to GDC. I don't even know if I'm like really known. Like, to me, I feel like the extent to which I'm known is the extent to which, like, at least I hope, is the extent to which I tried to like really like help people learn when I was like in school. Like, otherwise, like, I'm not like a huge like self-promotion person. I kind of hope for the work to speak for itself. Honestly, I kind of want to make like a secret alias in order to like post more stuff. But like, I don't feel a need to have my face be on it or it be in front of my face and like it be like a badge that represents me. Like, one of the things I enjoy about living here is like I'm kind of obscure. Like, people don't, yeah, just like, I don't know, don't expect me to like live here. Like, I went to get a sandwich and the person was like really surprised, like, oh, one of the people, like, first off, they knew what Potionomics was and they were like, wow, I'm so surprised that one of the people that like worked on Potionomics lives here. And I was like, well, I gotta live somewhere, and also I'm equally surprised that you like know what Potionomics is, because like, you know, people here don't like play that many games. It's like a bit more obscure. If they've heard of it, it's usually because they know one of my friends, right? Or me. And but like, I enjoy that. Like, I just want to be like a person and make things from like that humanist perspective. But you know, it is fun to talk about stuff. It is fun to like communicate these ideas and hopefully like get people excited to make stuff. So that's why I like do some of these things too, you know. And yeah, that's about it. I just want to like introduce some more ideas that hopefully are like fresh and novel, or maybe otherwise not represented, stuff like that, or like ways of looking at things, or to validate some approaches, or validate like not being an expert before you try to start making your like masterpiece, right? Like, the point of the masterpiece is that it makes you a master, right?
We have like one last question from at Magic Bunny Art. I wonder who that
Hey Megan, love you.
is. Who's your favorite character from Potionomics?
Yeah, I don't know. Okay, so like, I think it's the Cat Pirates. I think it's the Cat Pirates because like I'm kind of most proud of them, but I also really like Luna and Saffron. I feel like all of those are like big like achievements for the project in different ways. Like, Luna has like the 2D eyes and doing that effect and getting that all working was like quite actually quite a challenge, but I feel like it like paid off. And just like between all the characters, I don't know, there's like a good feeling of variety and differences and uniqueness between all of them. But I feel like those ones kind of hit like certain like milestones in the process. And also they gave me faith in like the team's coordination ability, right? Because like especially Luna and Saffron were a little bit more like team designed or designed by committee to some extent, more so Saffron. And we maintain an internal fear of committee, right? We don't want to feel like we're just defaulting to the easiest to accept thing. We want like people to feel, well, even within the team, to feel like attached to ideas and decisions and to have that sense of commitment, right? That it's important that it's this way, right? That this is worth something. It means something to the story, the character, the gameplay, all that stuff we're trying to thread together.
What was challenging about Saffron?
Oh, I'm making the arm because like
Oh,
it
yeah.
has to like kind of actually be modeled to articulate, and like most modelers don't think about articulation enough, even with like normal figures, let alone one that's like weirdly mechanical and stuff. And so basically, I
I
kind of had to
see,
like
yeah.
reconstruct chunks of it to like really make the joints work correctly, because like I was the only one that had like experience with that, and I've done like some woodworking, so I kind of get like the edges that it would make and stuff.
Oh yeah, because it's a puppet arm.
Like prosthetic.
That's crazy. Yeah, those are beautiful designs. Well, this is another instance of me that I haven't thought of my segue, but it was really great getting to catch up with you. And I
Yeah.
don't want to like hold you here too long if you have to run, but it was so fun. And do you have anything you want to plug before
Oh
you
yeah, I want to congratulate my friend Aslak. He got nominated for Tesla Grad 2. Tesla Grad 2 got nominated for an Annie for character animation, which is what we got nominated for last year. So like, congratulations. That's fucking sick as hell.
Oh yeah, I wanted to try to mention, yeah, like 'cause a year ago like this time Angel and Emily, right? Like you guys both got nominated for Potionomics like best game
And then
animation.
I ran into Aslak and start and met him at GDC, and we started chatting, and then he invited me to the Norway thing, and then now he's nominated for the, I don't know, it's cool. It's like funny. Like I
That's
little did I
awesome.
know I was speaking to the next nominee,
Ooh, so cool.
Very cool. And buy Potionomics, it's on sale right now.
Oh
Go
yeah.
Potionomics.
Bye, Potionomics.
I'd love to come back anytime. Yeah, but I gotta bounce. I'll see
Yeah,
you.
Angel, it's so good to talk to you again,
Love
man.
you
And yeah,
guys.
this
Love
is
you,
good. All
Carl.
right, so let's outro this mother.
And well, that's the end of this creative blog. Angel, thanks for being our guest and sharing your story.
And thanks to our listeners. Follow us on social media at Creative Block, where we ask for drawing prompts and questions to ask our guests. And a huge thanks to our editor, Clements, for editing the podcast, and Marco for helping us produce the show, and Ibuka for creating the short clips we've been putting out.
Yeah, if you love our show, you can support us on Patreon. Becoming a patron gets you early access to interviews and access to our Discord community. We use the money to help us pay our team, basically. So that's how that you would be contributing. A great way to support us as well is to just interact with our content. You can like, subscribe, put the little bell, or comment. Comments go a long way. So, if there's anything that you want to share about what you thought about this episode, or maybe what color shirt are you wearing right now if you don't have any inspiration, click the link in the description of this episode to follow Angel everywhere, to see our Patreon and everything. I've been your host, V.
And I was Carl, so keep being creative. And you know what? We'll see you next week.
Bye.
Bye.